He's already banned from 2 open mics, and he's working on getting banned from this one, too. So we go, he's going to let him do his thing, y'all. My home, one of my favorites in the city, as always, is the Eric Hollaback.
Yeah!
I'm not sure if that's true.
Rumors.
I got to send some emails. It's most likely rumors. Accurate. Rumors. Rumors. There's a lot of rumors going around, but I for sure can't go to the Hi-Ho anymore. I'm super banned from that place. Anyway. That's really true. That's been confirmed multiple times. By visits of me going, hello, who can I talk to? And they're like, get the fuck out of my face. I don't want to see you anymore.
Welcome to Highway Diary. I don't know what this episode is. It's by a dumpster. I just got my recorder back from jail. I'm here with DC Paul.
What's happening, Eric Hollaback?
We're at the Young Funny Spontaneous Show where a stand-up show is about to go down, you know. Yeah, that's all right. That's right.
Right.
Just talk this way.
Directly into it. Gotcha.
So I showed you a Joe Biden clip.
Yeah.
Where he's saying, do you know how horny that you make me, a 13-year-old girl standing in front of me? Yeah. What do you think?
Thank you. I don't buy it. I don't, the audio wasn't audible enough for me to confirm it. That's what he said. And I have more respect for Joe Biden. I don't think he would say something so outwardly creepy at Capitol Hill at this photo op. I don't buy it.
You know, let me tell you something. I got molested once on an Uber ride by a rich lady.
Okay.
And she was like, you want a cup of blay? And she grabbed my dick. She was going for my junk, bro.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I just think rich people are creeps. That's the end of that story.
I don't know, man.
So you get to a certain level and you just take chances because, like, you know, it's like, do you have, you know how, like, some frat boy gets, like, 4 DUIs and because his dad is a judge, he gets them all expunged and they just let him go? Imagine if you're a senator. What kind of chances you're going to be taking?
That happened when he was a senator or after he was VP, that video?
That's like a few, like, weeks ago.
Okay, yeah, I know. I don't buy it.
Tell you another conspiracy. Huh. You know who got, the guy who filmed Eric Gardner getting strangled?
Uh-huh.
There's a conspiracy theory, it's been reported, mm-hmm. that the NOPD tried to poison the guy who filmed the video.
That's the NOPD?
I mean, the NYPD.
They tried to poison him household.
I didn't read the whole
thing. Oh, shit. What's the point?
I read a little bit of the article, and then I started jerking off.
You got to give me some details, man.
Let me tell you something. When you read articles, okay, sometimes there's like cleavage of busty ladies advertising Skechers. And then I got to beat off for 28 minutes.
You got that short attention span.
And then I fall asleep.
28 whole minutes to...
Well, it's like finding the right porn, you know. I'm trying to find girls of a certain dimension.
Okay.
Sometimes I go anime porn, you know. Sometimes it's like, you know, some weird squid creature.
So yeah. I need to find this article about the guy who filmed Eric Gardner.
From then on, I've been targeted by NYPD. I got 5 pending cases right now. 2 in Supreme Court, 3 in criminal. Since then, I've just been harassed. I've been almost killed in Rikers Island.
How long were you held at Rikers Island? We interviewed your aunt at the time that you were in Rikers.
I was in Rikers 2 separate times, one for 60 days and one for 30 days, I believe. And the 60-day stay was the time that I went on the hunger strike.
For how long?
A month and a half.
What were you striking about?
The rat poison, and I ain't want to eat nothing that Rikers provided me.
Why? What do you mean rat poison?
It was rat poison in the food.
Getting poisoned by the NYPD.
I think it's coming from him. I think he's claiming that he's getting poisoned.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure, but... And that fucked up is like... I think the same thing about WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is like, you know, takes all Snowden stuff... They take stuff that's gotten from different people who have crisis of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like what's going on with the government. They release the documents, and then the people who release the documents are the criminals instead of the criminals. We were always talking about Hillary's email. Oh, well, what kind of email was she working? Was she working with the DOD email or was she working with her personal? Fuck all that noise. I don't give a shit. What was in the fucking emails? That's right. The only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And if there's some super creepy shit in the emails, you know, we should stab those people. I don't know. I just think not enough politicians have got... Ben Franklin said that every 20 years, mm-hmm. the blood of patriots is the lifeblood of freedom.
Wait, I think you mixed two.
Yeah, I mixed them all up.
All right. You know,
but he was saying we need a revolution every 20 years to be a free country. Mm-hmm. Okay, we were formed in 1776, you know. How many hundreds of years are we overdue to stabbing everybody? You know what I'm saying?
Man, you can really carry this podcast by yourself, bro. You got some interesting. I would listen. Interesting opinions.
You're here.
So what else you got?
All right. Well, I want to talk about comedy. I like to talk about some political things. I want to talk about one more political thing.
Okay, what you got?
I want to play a clip. Newt Gingrich said, well, I don't think a lot of the establishment likes Donald Trump. He hasn't been through the rites. He hasn't been through the initiation. He's not a part of the secret society.
And now they're faced with a very real prospect of Donald Trump becoming the leader of the party, and it absolutely drives them crazy. They just cannot imagine sharing. Well, because he's an outsider. He's not them. He's not part of the club. He's uncontrollable. You know, he hasn't been through the initiation rites. He didn't belong to the secret society. And I think that they don't see him. They have no idea how to relate.
That's what Newt Gingrich said on Fox News, trying not to turn into a lizard. I just think, like, so you're saying that all the Republicans have to go through Masonic rituals to be...
I really wish you would have sent me, like, all of these clips that you're talking about.
Okay, well, I sent them to you, but
no,
it's not
you
like they got
me,
listened.
You sent me the Joe Biden one.
Okay,
but, like,
did you listen to that with headphones to confirm?
No, I didn't. No, but
motherfucker.
I mean, if I'd have known, okay, but I read the subtitles, I listened to it very closely to my ear, I just didn't buy it. And even, like, what's this last one? Newt Gingrich openly said on Fox News that there's a secret society and Donald Trump hasn't joined it so he can't win. I gotta see that.
I'll send it to you, but I'll play the clip. Let's play the clip.
He's not part of the club. He's uncontrollable. You know, he hasn't been through the initiation rites. He didn't belong to the secret society. And I think that they don't see him. They have no idea how to relate to him.
Play a clip.
All right. Let's talk about the comedy scene.
Okay. What about it, man?
How do you feel like you're developing? Do you think, like, it's a good environment for you? How long have you been doing it here? Are you from here?
Yeah, I'm born and raised here, but I've only been doing stand-up for 2.5 years now. And I think this is, like, for me, a good scene for me to develop before, like, I move on to another market. But, yeah, I mean, this is my hometown. It's the most important scene for me to develop on. Like, I want like my hometown to be proud of me if I were to go on elsewhere and do it somewhere else. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I like the scene. I do. It's busy.
So, did you start out doing it once a week, doing it every now and then it kind of ramped up, or?
Yeah, well, it was very much every now and then. When I started off, I was with the sketch comedy group, and they were only doing a show once a month. So, like...
So, for a while, you're like, oh, doing comedies once a month.
Something like that, yeah. When I can fit it in with other stuff, yeah. But, like, I would say, like, maybe Christmas of last year is really when I decided to start doing it, like, as often as I do it now. It's only been since Christmas.
Now, for me, you know, John Rowe is a big influence on me just because of the amount of shows he does every week.
Mm-hmm. He's good, too. He's funny.
Has he been, like, a mentor for you, too?
Oh, my God. Well, the thing is, I won't say that this is how John Rowe has inspired me and has been a mentor to me. So, one time around Christmas, I did my Christmas jokes at Carrollton Station, and it went okay.
You have a Christmas sweater.
Yeah, I got plenty of Christmas sweaters. Shit, I got a whole section of my closet devoted to Christmas sweaters. But I did my Christmas jokes, and John comes up to me afterwards. He's like, you know what, DC? He didn't even know me, by the way. We weren't friends at the time. He didn't even know me. He's like, you know what, DC? You were good, but you'll never be as good as me because you keep doing all of these plays and you want to do radio commercials and you want to be an actor. You'll never be as good as me until you focus on just stand-up. And at the time, I was like, who the fuck is this dude? Like, he don't know me.
Yeah.
So the way he inspired me is to show him that I can be just as good and better than him on stage. and still do everything else that I want to do. You know, like John Rowe likes to take credit for everybody in Young Funny. He wants to say that, like, he had a hand in making somebody better, somebody funnier. John Rowe just inspired me by challenging me, by telling me that I can't do something. Yeah. And, like, that's what I like.
The thing I like about John Rowe is I'm like, hey, I'm going to check out the Station Bar. And he's like, fuck that, I'll be there too. You know, like, he does everything. Mm-hmm. He does everything. It's not like, it was my first time.
He don't be getting booked that much, though. I know that. He ain't got no standing gigs.
Okay. Look, I love John Rowe.
I was hating on him. Yeah, I love John Rowe too, but I'm gonna hate on him. He gonna hear it. Fuck John Rowe.
What do you have to bring to the table?
Remember when you had the roast battle and you made me roast John Rowe, and he wasn't even there?
He didn't show up.
So I had to fucking do the fucking John Rowe roast jokes without him even being there.
Yeah, that was like a year ago.
Yeah, yep. Before I was even friends with John Rowe.
So
you're about to ask me something.
Well, yeah. What do you think of this scene? I feel like I am growing leaps and bounds. I have, like, codependency issues, DC Paul. So one person doesn't like me, I spiral. Mm-hmm. I spiral. I have bipolar manic episodes. I'm like, everything sucks. Nobody likes me, you know?
Rumors. Accurate. Rumors. Rumors. There's a lot of rumors going around. But I for sure can't go to the Hi-Ho anymore. I'm super banned from that place. Anyway. That's really true. That's been confirmed multiple times.
I can agree with that, man. I think that you were always funny to me. So when you say you're growing by leaps and bounds, I think maybe you're growing, to me, more in your relatability. Like, you were always very raw, and you would open up with something very raw on purpose, right? But I think that, like, now you're still doing raw, but, like, from what I've been seeing, it's more relatable. You know, sometimes it's cringeworthy, but it's more relatable than it used to be. I've always thought you're funny. You're one of my favorite in the city. I told you that last night, and I mean it. But the thing about, you know, this scene, man, is that you already know comedy is subjective, right? So a lot of this scene, a lot of this city, really, is kind of run by these hipster people who think it's, you know, cool to be extra PC, you know, ultra feminist type of thing, and that's cool, but it doesn't make them better than anybody else, you know what I mean? So, like, I think that was one of your detractors, that, like, that people from that scene weren't fans of yours, but, like, they're not everybody. They don't represent everybody. They don't even represent the majority.
I was just confused.
I don't think they represent locals either. I think they represent transplants, people who moved here from college, stuck around, and tried to impose their you know, PC views on everybody else. But, I mean, this is fucking New Orleans. Like, let people tell jokes about what they want to tell jokes about, you know, and stop being such bitches. Okay.
You know, comedy is very much polarizing because you really put yourself on a limb trying to make a punchline about something that resembles your opinion, but your opinion might change depending on what debate you watched or what article you read. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a fluid thing of your gaining of awareness about anything political.
You know, man, I don't even think that you have to, that comedy has to be somebody's vehicle to put their opinion out there. You know, it's an entertainment art form. It's to make people laugh. So what if what you're saying is not really, like, your true and honest opinion, you know what I mean? Like, that to me, it's cool if you can, you know, if you're using your comedy to be like, I'm also a cool person, here's my opinion, my ideas. But I mean, honestly, if you
they're
put on
trending,
a character,
they're trending,
that type of shit, if you could put on a character and just play, you know, and make people laugh and do something, you know, that's not, it ain't about like trying to prove a point that I'm cool, I'm PC, I'm better than you guys.
See,
no,
I never wanted to look, like, write about stuff. That was never my goal.
Mm-hmm.
My goal was to just be as funny as possible. How can I say the funniest possible things and push that down and distill that in the fucking 3 minutes I have at some night?
Feel all depressed, you know? It's like, well, I have codependent personality disorder. That's what my therapist said, you know? I'm codependent. I get real bummed out when people don't like me, you know? This time, September 24th of 1970 is when my Uncle Rufus died. So I'm really fucked up. My whole family gets real upset over the anniversary, you know. He was a forklift operator, and was working in a warehouse, and he was picking up a pallet, and a whole crate of child porn killed him dead, so he's dead now. So my Uncle Rufus is one of the lesser known victims of child pornography. He was just in shipping receiving. I don't think he was in production, so I think he's innocent, but he did die this time in 1970, and so there's going to be a candlelight vigil by the train tracks if y'all want to join me after this set.
And it's cool that, if you can make a point with what you're doing or what you say is clever enough and, like, makes a lot of sense. But, I mean, that's not it's not always – and I, yeah, that's cool. It's really cool if you can do that. But that's not always a point of comedy. And, you know, I'm over that. I'm over trying to be PC, trying to please PC people. You know, like, I don't really give a shit about them. Like
all right, but also you speak from a certain platform, you know. You're a minority. You're a gay black
I'm
man.
I'm a gay black man.
You know what I'm saying?
Minority.
So how does your experience with that... Did you have to come out to your parents? Was that, like, a difficult thing?
No, man. I had,
they were cool?
Yeah, bro. I wish and pray that everybody could have had, like, my coming out experience.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
See, I'm sorry. My hypothesis is that sometimes... like adversity is the only way in which people grow, you know.
There's something I want to tell you about the stress and how we often look at stress, okay? And I think it's an important thing because many people have told me from my lectures it's the one thing they remember, okay? I was sitting in a dentist's office and looked at an article that said, "How do lobsters grow?" Well, I don't care how lobsters grow, but I was interested in it. And it points out that a lobster is a soft, mushy animal that lives inside of a rigid shell. That rigid shell does not expand. Well, how can the lobster grow? Well, as the lobster grows, that shell becomes very confining. Right? And the lobster feels itself under pressure and uncomfortable. It goes under a rock formation to protect itself from predatory fish, casts off the shell, and produces a new one. Well, eventually, that shell becomes very uncomfortable as it grows, right? Back under the rocks. Good. And the lobster repeats this numerous times. The stimulus for the lobster to be able to grow is that it feels uncomfortable. Right? Now, if lobsters had doctors, they would never grow. Because as soon as the lobster feels uncomfortable, goes to the doctor, gets a Valium, gets a Percocet, feels fine. Never cuts off its shell. So I think that we have to realize is that we have to realize that times of stress are also times that are signals for growth.
Diversity, education, travel, I was going to say reading, but I guess that's self-educating, you know, but yeah.
For sure. Go to the library and shit.
You know, honestly, whatever diversity I faced being a gay black man, it wasn't in respect to coming out to my parents. My dad actually was like, he had kind of knew before I told him, and then the conversation became like, why did you take so long to tell me? Is it because you felt like I would judge you? Did you not think that I would accept it? You know, like, he was like, why couldn't you tell me years ago when this and that was happening? He knew when I was going through things with guys I was dating and not telling nobody. So I had a great experience. Even still, like, I can talk to both my parents every day. If I'm just having random sex, or if I found somebody who I'm dating, I just be like, "Hey, daddy, I got me some Dookie Wee Wee last night," and he'd be like,
"Wait, whoa, whoa, Dookie Wee Wee,
Dookie Wee Wee,
huh?
Yeah, man.
See, look, not everyone's from the Ninth Ward. You know, like, there's like other
Dookie Wee Wee coming to the stage. He's already banned from 2 open mics, and he's working on getting banned from this one too.
Yo, I was listening to Pink sing her song, and she goes, "Just like fire. Just like fire." I'm like, bitch, you don't talk like that. You know, it does talk like that. Black guys from the Ninth Ward.
Okay,
fire. Fire. You know, stop trying to pretend like you talk like a black
Pink,
dude,
man.
From the fucking Ninth Ward.
I fuck some Pink. She's
all right, but she's from Cali or whatever.
No, she's from Philadelphia, and then she moves to Cali.
Wherever the fuck she's from. I know, I'm on to you, Pink. That's some bullshit. You don't talk like that. Just like fire. Just like Madonna. She got 2 minutes of Guy Ritchie dick, and she's like, "Oh, Madonna."
I would like to welcome all of you here tonight and thank all of you for coming. I would especially like to thank Gucci and UNICEF for making this evening a reality for me. I don't think we're on the grounds of the United Nations by chance. And there's something poetic about the fact that we are no longer in America, but we are on a piece of land that belongs to the world.
I'm getting a lorry to my flat. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you, Madonna.
All right, so anyway.
What else?
Your personal experience, but that's what you have to draw from. And it's almost like things get very personal in comedy because you're talking from your experience. You're going, blah, blah, blah. And that's like a trigger word. That's assault to some people, depending on their framework, depending on their spectrum of understanding.
Yeah, man. Like, anybody could find anything offensive, depending on where they come from. Like you said, their reception of it is based on, like, their own experiences. Anything could be offensive. I've tried to stop worrying about that, man, because, like, anything could be offensive.
Have you gotten in your head about, oh, this person doesn't like me, that person doesn't like me as you're making your way?
I'm over it now. I used to have it in my head.
What do you mean? That's what I want to talk about.
Like what?
You used to have what in your head?
Like, I know I'm banned from, I'm banned from a Monday spot, but I'm also booked on Mondays. But, like, when I see those people, like, I've heard things that they say about me, things that they think about me.
You got banned from 12 Mile?
Is that the one? 12 Mile, yeah. But, I mean, I don't give a shit. 12 Mile is, like...
From a tweet.
It's raggedy. Okay. Well, like, from a tweet in which I was defending myself from some shit that I felt like was inappropriate. A bunch of them people, like, kind of bombarded me. First of all, one of them found my Twitter... And, like, found some, like, weeks-old tweet and retweeted it and got her girlfriends to retweet it and was like, oh, my God, look at this guy. He's saying awful stuff. And then they started saying shit to me, and I said shit back to him. But, I mean, honestly, I don't give a shit. I said mean stuff to that girl because I don't think highly of her. I don't have nothing nice to say to or about her. So I'm not ashamed of myself for saying mean stuff to her. She said mean shit to me, too. You know, but, yeah, when I used to be around her and I know who her friends are, the people who, like, adore her and put her on, like, this platform as, like, the hipster princess of PC of New Orleans comedy, I know who those people are. And when they used to be around me, it would be in my head, like, I know this person doesn't fuck with me. Like, I know this person is speaking to me right now, but, like, doesn't like me. And honestly, after a while, it became fun to interact with those people, like, knowing, like, you know, this person really don't like me, but here he is smiling in my face. You know, here she is having a conversation with me. You know, I think that some of them, after at least getting to know me, you know, like me or learn to respect me a little bit, but, like, they definitely had these preconceived notions from their princess, that girl that's always dressed like she's coming from the gym, but it's clearly not coming from the gym. You know the girl I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about. That girl.
Look,
she'd be wearing okay. workout clothes for no reason.
All right, let me say a lot of things right now. Let me say a lot of things right now.
Shit.
First of all, we're keeping things vague. That might be frustrating for certain people. But let me also say, what I've noticed time and time again is, like, I got banned from the Hi-Ho. So I go directly to the people and I'm like, hey, look, I'm dating a MILF from Texas with a kid right now. You know, I know your girl's got a kid. Let's meet at this specific location. Let's have beer. I got meatballs cooking. Let's have a powwow and let's have a chat.
Why? Why?
You know
why'd
what
you
I got
that?
Back?
Why'd you do that though?
No, but I'm saying, do you know what I got back?
I believe
after
you.
I sent
I believe
all that?
You got back some like nothing as
nothing.
Nice as what you gave out.
No, I got nothing back.
Wait, okay, I believe that.
I got a shunning.
Oh, I'm asking why you did that?
Because I am baffled in the comedy scene by the lack of communication. You know, in Jersey, we got prom. I'm like, yo, let's talk about that shit now, motherfucker. And what I found is the people from the East Coast, yeah, it might seem like they're cruel or whatever. What they don't do is avoid proms for their whole life and become alcoholics. And what I'm saying is, if you don't communicate, you're intellectually lazy, is what I would say.
I would, yeah.
I think if you only want to be around people who agree with you, you're definitely stupid. You're definitely going into a cultish behavior.
Absolutely.
Which
I also
is
agree
not
with that.
Healthy mm-hmm. at all. And what I'd say is you should only... I only want to talk to... Like, I'm like a weird person where I only want to go to the Hi-Ho all day, but I don't want to call... I don't want to ruin the show. But, like, in my weird head, I'm just like, all I want to do is go on that show and talk about that all day on the microphone because truth in comedy. Because that's actually true. And let's talk on stage... about what's true mm-hmm. in the scene, even if it makes one person look bad for 5 seconds. You because know, it's like, let's talk about this shit. Or we're going to be capped at a certain level of understanding truth and comedy.
I think that you should more so want to talk about that in person, off stage, with those people.
Yeah, but like, every but time listen, I try to schedule that shit.
I know, but like talking about
like,
it.
They're like, fuck you.
Talking about it on stage at the High Hole. The High Hole gives you like four to five minutes once a week, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not that important. It's not that
I'm just
important.
Saying, why'd you like, ban you, me though?
Because listen, like, when somebody has a domain, when you run this, you're king of this, you know, you can be petty like that. You can make up whatever kind of rule you want to. You know, like, but when you give them that much power by being bothered by it, you should shrug that shit off. Doesn't fucking Johnny Rock have a thing in Metairie? What is that on the same night as High Hole?
No, but there's a Carrollton. He's on Wednesday night, so you can go to Metairie instead of Carrollton. I like Carrollton though. Those guys have been nice to me.
Carrollton is my favorite, and I like those guys are nice to me. I'm not sure if they like me, but they're nice to me. But I like the format at Carrollton. Like,
and they're very respectful. I think they're respectful of hard work.
I fuck with them. I like the whole like 3 minutes thing. The 3 minutes at Carrollton forces a comedian to like kind of get right to it and like get as many as you can in those first 3 minutes. Yeah. And like that's a Carrollton. Like, is still my favorite. Sometimes when I can, I go there. But like when I first started, like that's the place that helped me figure out which ones were the good ones, so I can put like I put different sets from Carrollton together to make my first 10-minute set. And I realized, oh wow. Like, really, working on 3 minutes at a time is good. That's what I think. Because
it's like, so if I got these 3 minutes, that's one bit. If I can go this bit kills, mm-hmm. this bit kills, you got 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have 18. Now you do this.
And then with it being 3x3x3, you're making fucking biscuits. On that list, you know, like, you have to, you, like, it's also about, like, standing out, you know, like, because you see 19 and 21 comedians do their 3 minutes every Wednesday. So, like, you forcing yourself to be funny in those 3 minutes and to be memorable. So, I like Carrollton and those dudes.
Yeah. Yes. I would like to do Lost Love. I hope I get the opportunity.
That was cool, too. That was cool, too.
Like, so you're developing though. I can absolutely see when I first met you to how you did stand up to now. It's like leaps and bounds. It's like every month.
I think that a part of that is just doing it consistently. Like when we first met, I wasn't doing it consistently. Yeah. You know, like now.
But it is interesting too. Like you said, like out of the universe, you get banned from 12 Mile. You get House of Blues on this Monday show. Mm-hmm. You know? It's just like that they're just going, hey, over
well,
here, you're
because
all good.
Even when I wasn't, you know, shout out to the universe. But even when I wasn't booked at the House of Blues, like, I didn't put that much. I did go to 12 Mile one time and, like, face-to-face and asked her if I could sign the list. And she told me no.
I face-to-face asked her, hey, what's the problem? And she said, I don't want to talk to you.
Well, here's the thing. Then you just remove any power you just gave that person. Like, just fine. Like, you know, like,
I'm just baffled by the lack of wanting to have a chat. Because, like, I think, like, you know, I like talking to people who disagree with me. And, I, you know, that's cool.
I think that
maybe
you,
I'm wrong. Maybe I'm super dumb.
You
please correct
wanting
me.
To have
Thank
a
you.
Chat and her not giving it to you gives her power. So, like, remove any power you're giving to those people, any of those people.
Yeah.
Like, don't give them that power. Don't give a shit
you know,
about
I'm
chatting
only here 9
about
months.
Going to the High Hole. Yeah,
nine
but
months,
that's
man.
Okay.
I'm gone.
There's so much more in the comedy scene, in the art scene in this city that you can do that doesn't involve, like, those small-minded people.
Huh?
It's so much more you can do that doesn't involve those people. Like, you can totally go around them and have them see what it is that you're doing without them. You know, like, fuck them. You don't need 12 Mile or the High Hole to be a comedian. You honestly don't. You know that already. You honestly don't, you know? So, like, stop. I think you should just, like, stop being bothered by it. Just do something else on those days, right?
I have mania. I have several psychoses. I'm trying to work in them.
I get it. I've seen that.
You met my father.
Yeah, he's cool, too.
We were hanging out. He had to come by for one of my court cases.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for those of you who don't know, you know, I got my stuff out of jail.
Yeah, we got this recorder that we use to record this podcast as we speak.
That was in jail for a long time.
Confiscated.
You know, by the NOPD. They thought I had a meter maid, thought I waved a 9mm at her. Actually, mm-hmm. I was putting up posters for a comedy show with a staple gun.
He had a staple gun, people.
And then I went to jail, and then they took my recorder, and then I haven't had a podcast since January, and it's September right now.
No way, though, but they didn't have it for a day. How long have they had your you recorded?
That long?
Since January?
I got it back on fucking Friday.
I thought you said it was a month. He was going for a month.
Huh?
They maybe said 8 months. The 8 months time?
8 months.
Yeah. Okay. That's a long ass time to be without your recording, man.
Dude, I haven't recorded any of my sets or anything like that.
Okay, so this is the comeback podcast
for real.
Featuring DC Paul.
Burning all right. All those bridges. Also, shout out to C-Free, Dominant Yoga Radio. I've been doing a lot of his podcast because I haven't had an outlet like this, and this has been fun. So you were outside the Spontaneous Show.
Mm-hmm.
You
Bar are Redux.
Young Funny. What is that? What's going on?
Young Funny is a comedy troupe started by the one Mr. John Rowe. And I think it's kind of his brainchild, where he can pick out the comedians that he feels like is new but has potential. And then, like, we work together as a group of friends with a comedy troupe, you know. Our most consistent thing that we do is a Spontaneous Show every Tuesday here at Bar Redux. But we've done other shows, you know. We help each other out. We bounce jokes off each other. We always get each other from the airport. It's just a group of people. We help each other out when we get arrested.
Sorry.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You guys got arrested. You were on a bridge, you know, and I got a phone call from DC Paul one morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waking up. You know, I just jerked off for 23 minutes. Because I tried to read an article, and then about who poisoned, which one of the NYPD poisoned the guy who filmed the Eric Gardner thing.
Oh, you were reading that when I called you? Were reading that, been masturbating,
yeah,
when I called you?
And then I saw...
Stay was the time that I went on the hunger strike.
For how long?
A month and a half.
What were you striking about?
The rat poison, and I ain't want to eat nothing that Rikers provided me.
Why? Eat. What do you mean, rat poison?
It was rat poison in the food.
The sponsors, you know, some big titty Skecher lady. So I'm just recapping for the audience who missed that part. But
we were on our way to Covington to get Kyle's vehicle, because the night before Kyle had got arrested on the way to Covington.
Kyle Smith, yeah.
Kyle Smith, a member of Young Funny, my homie, little man, little bit.
Dude, that guy's amazing.
Shorty, midget.
Everything about Kyle Smith. He's my favorite person. He's so fucking great.
I love
great.
Him. I do, man. He's so
he's
talented.
So sweet.
He does mimes. He dances.
He does backflips. It's like, what's happening right now? He does a backflip.
The bitch hurt my wrist.
We were tussling.
We were tussling outside of B Dub show. I forgot what the name of that place was.
Oh, the Turtle Bar.
The Turtle
in Metairie.
The Turtle in Metairie. We were tussling, and somehow he was just real quick with. I tried to grab him. My wrist is still hurting, man. Like I was wearing a wrap
Ace bandage.
Yeah, man. But so.
What's with these rubber bands? You have like 18 rubber bands in your right hand. Is that?
Is it what?
Conquest. What's going on?
Is it conquest? This is just my thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't symbolize anything. No symbols.
I mean, it's my thing.
Symbiology. What's going on with the rubber bands, DC Paul?
It's my thing.
Are you in a cult?
No, I ain't in a cult. I'm a member of 3 fraternities. I ain't a member of no cult, though.
What's going on? You have the eye of
Lucifer. You like to read into
Lucifer.
Everything in a person. The eye of Lucifer. I don't even know what that looked like. No.
You got a tattoo on your hand.
Oh, do I? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's going on with that?
It's just an Egyptian eye.
Okay. Interesting.
Is it really?
You're wearing a pendant right now. Who's that homie?
I like to call this Imhotep. Imhotep. I mean, I know this is an Imhotep because the cowrie shells are not really an Egyptian thing. It's more of a, I would say, West Coastal African. We use cowrie shells, and there's 3 of them. I know there's 3 of them across his forehead. I like the number 3 a lot. But I call this Imhotep. Imhotep was like one of the first Renaissance men in recorded history. He was like a poet, a priest, a medicine man, a writer. I think he was probably into politics in ancient Egypt. And I identify with him as a modern day Renaissance man. I fuck with Imhotep. But that's it.
I have this weird superstition where, like, I do see the number 33 a lot. If I wake up, it's normally 11:33. I come home, I look at the thing. It's like 4:33, like a lot of the time. That's my only, I don't know what that means, but. We're just spitballing here.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's this going? Where's your goals in stand-up? Do you want to have a special? By what date? How much time do you have? What are you thinking about in the long term?
Man,
how do you turn this shit into a career?
Honestly, man, well, I have been... My long-term goal is to be, like, the Arsenio of my generation. You know, Arsenio Paul, if you will. You know, but just, like, to have a nightly, late-night show, hopefully on network television. A late-night show, you know, kind of, like, urban, but, like, crossover urban, like Arsenio was. And... kind of leading up to that point, I'm doing, like, hosting events. I'm hosting an event tomorrow right across the canal. Tank and the Bangers has a backyard hangout. I don't know if you're familiar with Tank and the Bangers, but you should Google them, Tank and the Bangers. They are awesome. They will be huge real soon. But anyway, I'm hosting their event tomorrow, you know, and just kind of getting...
What does hosting mean? You're bringing up the different bands?
Well, so the Tank and the Bangers backyard hangout is... the first hour and a half or so is an open mic. So, like... The Bangers is a band, and they'll play for anybody who wants to sing or rap, or poets, or whatever wants to happen. For the whole open mic portion, I'm MCing, and then there's a featured artist, Miss Maikia Javon. I'm going to bring her up, and then I'm going to bring up Tank and the Bangers. And I'm going to tell jokes in between. I've done this for them, like, the past 3 times now. I tell jokes in between. I even have, like, you've heard my joke about the vagina wipes, right?
Yeah.
So that joke is actually, I went to Afropunk to see Tank and the Bangers. And I stayed in the Airbnb with Tank's aunt and 2 other women. And, like, the vagina wipe story kind of happened in that room. So, like, I hope, hopefully, if there ain't too many kids around, I'm going to tell the vagina wipe joke on stage tomorrow in front of the women who the joke is about. My T-Tina, Shalunda, and Miss Donna. And just try to make them laugh about, like, something that they were actually there to witness.
Is that ever, more nerve-wracking when you do stand-up when people that you're talking about are in the audience and they know that you know?
No, it's fun for me to make people uncomfortable. So, like, when I'm talking about you and, like, you know, everybody in the audience is looking at you, I feel like you're more uncomfortable than I am.
I really have
a little bit of power over you. Like, you know, like, I can make you laugh at yourself. You know, I can make other people laugh at you. You know, so, no, it's fun. I've done that before when I did the other Tank of the Bangers backyard hangouts. I wrote jokes about, like, the saxophone player in that band. It's this white dude named Albert. Albert's so fucking handsome. Albert is like a Ken doll. I'm black as hell. If you can't tell from looking at me, from listening to me, I'm black as hell.
No, they saw the selfie at the start of the show.
Okay, so good. So, Albert is the saxophone player in that band, and he's so just like a handsome Ken doll type of dude. So, like, at one of the backyard hangouts, I did my jokes about him. It's kind of about, like, how he's so fucking good looking. He's like if Zach Morris had soul. He's like, he looks like that, like, mm-hmm. Blue eyes, blonde hair, got the wind blowing in his hair, you know, and I could see him, like, blushing, being all bashful. It was just funny, like, making jokes that were, they were flattering jokes, but, like, he was like,
yeah.
He was blushing.
So I brought my father here, you know, to...
Is he here today?
No. Okay. He was just in for the one court date.
Okay, good.
You know, and then I was like, we were in court together, and what happened was, you know, they were like, actually, my lawyer just freaked out. He's like, where's the fucking staple gun? Where's the fucking staple gun? You got nothing. You can't convict someone of fucking murder without a gun. You can't convict someone of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Right.
When the meter maid's clearly saying it's a 9mm. Uh-huh. Where is that, motherfucker?
Right.
It's in the evidence locker. Go get that and let me finish out this bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then the judge, the first time, just while my dad's there, they go, okay, we're going to postpone this trial until we can get the staple gun. It's downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Homie, it's downstairs. But they postponed the trial a month.
Mm-hmm.
So my fucking dad, you know, he flew back.
He can't
be back. And they calls me. He's like, should I be down there? Should I go down there? I'm like, man, it's like, you know,
the staple
just
gun
show
is like,
up.
It's in like probably one of them cardboard file boxes.
Yeah.
Stacked away, and it's going to take them
a month. But they took my fucking recorder. They had my old backpack. They had all my
shout
shit.
Shout out to having a fucking recorder back, and his podcast is back on.
Boom.
You heard me?
So anyway, so he just showed up for that. But when he was at this Young Funny show, right behind me in this backyard.
In this backyard?
You know what happened?
What?
He's not used to this Louisiana humidity.
Mm-hmm.
He's not used to it being 95 fucking degrees outside. He's getting his forehead bit by mosquitoes. It's 80% humidity. He goes to me, Eric, I need to, like, go go to your car for 2 seconds and have the AC blow on me because I'm about to fucking pass out right now.
Mm-hmm, that's believable.
So that's what happened. But I also feel like it's because I didn't have the best set, you know, and I definitely didn't do some of my jokes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was terrified to have my dad in the office.
I'm sure he's seen you before.
In my office, yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. That's
your
office.
But it's been,
it's
been like five years or...
Oh, he hasn't seen you in like 5 years?
For real.
Okay, all right. I don't remember what jokes you did that night then.
Yeah, I was just playing it safe with some. Like,
what's playing it safe for you, though? What?
Probably talking about my dick or whatever.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
it's as safe as you can.
No, that's... But he's heard that shit on the phone or whatever.
Okay.
You know... It is weird.
It is weird.
Everyone has their own triggers. Everyone has their own... We got to dance around each other's things. That's why I think people trust the comic, because they are able to ask those questions that are, like, deep in the thought, that are suppressed by religion, society, you mm-hmm. know. Who knows? What's going on? Who's...
What?
It's the great guru.
What's
John
up?
Rowe.
What's up, Barry? How you doing?
The head of Young Funny, you know?
Yada, yada, yada.
Of course he comes and interrupts our podcast.
You made the "I want to suck a little dick" symbol.
Wait, what?
To me.
I was trying to get a cigarette from you, but I was trying
to... No, that's not baby dick.
Trying to get you not to talk with it.
I thought that was "I
want to
suck a narrow penis."
That's what you wish it was. No. Trying to get you to come over here, give me a cigarette, and not say nothing. But you know that ain't gonna happen with the amazing John Rowe. We've already mentioned you a bunch of times on this podcast, so he's...
We were talking shit, man.
Hey guys,
talking shit, bro.
Yeah, I am.
We gave him love a couple times.
I'm sorry if my voice makes everyone out there come. That's just what I do.
Luckily, he's not close enough to the mic to really get picked up.
Am I getting picked up?
Yeah. So, what's Young Funny, John Rowe?
Young Funny is a group of comedians who I put together. Along the way, after people started asking me to mentor them, who were new to the comedy scene in New Orleans.
Who in particular actually mentored them?
Well, Kyle was the first.
Kyle actually mentored him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we saw Byron along the way, and you know he needed help.
So what'd you say to Byron behind the scenes?
I don't know.
What advice did you give to Byron?
Stop touching me!
You gotta talk into the microphone.
Well, I don't know. I was like, hey, Byron.
Yeah?
I like your style. Well, that's actually... Byron wasn't the same.
Can I be Byron? Can I pretend to be Byron?
Yes.
Yeah. I fuck with polarities.
Byron wasn't that weird back then. Byron was more normal. He's cool and guy, he's a cool guy.
I'm still wearing these.
Because I need those.
The rubber bands on your wrist? What does this mean?
It means...
What does this mean?
I don't know, man. It's an affront to the white man.
Damn. Getting put on blast.
Nah, I'm just playing. Nah. Now, so what did you want?
I don't know. He actually...
Young Funny, Byron, advice.
Apparently people actually mentor them.
Yeah. After that, well, Byron, who else we got? Kamar. No, it's Kenny. And Kenny came along, but he was a terrible person. We don't speak of his name. And that was a few other people. And then we started growing. DC was a great addition to the group because he's very businesslike.
He told a story that you were like, oh, you're doing all this other theater shit. You're doing this DJing nonsense,
yeah,
motherfucking bullshit. How about you start doing comedy?
I didn't say all that. I said
otherwise, you got no chance to be as funny as me.
I saw
suck my
he
dick.
Was very talented and was not given the comedy as much of a shot as I think he deserved to give it. And he has flowered into a beautiful comedian.
Yeah? You think you poured a little water?
Mm-hmm. Now he's on the phone with his mom, though.
He's a mama's boy?
Yeah. Aren't we all?
No.
Your mom doesn't like you. Let's talk about your mother, Eric.
Oh, no.
What? You might like asking personal questions on your podcast, but when they get thrown back at you?
I haven't talked to my mom in a while.
Why?
This is embarrassing. All right, here's what happened. So I was, like, working, you know.
Deep, you guys.
I'm, like, getting my master in screenwriting and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, like, 2 scholarships and, like, perfect grades or whatever. I was, like, working when I first got here with this documentary company to structure their documentary.
Ooh.
And so I was doing that for a few days, but I'm only going to get money in a year or 2 years after the fucking on the back end and all that stuff.
Mm.
You know.
But it's fancy.
So I started Uber driving. I got out of the car. So anyway, my mom goes, oh, so instead of telling people that you're working on a movie, I have to tell them you're a taxi driver now? I'm not one bitch. You're going to tell him nothing. Nothing. Click.
That's
I'm not
what
talking
you, did
to
you
her.
You call your mother a bitch?
Did you say bitch? I'm just saying, look. Some people have had to deal with unbelievable ridicule by a very evil person for their whole life, you know.
Can we meet your mom? Invite her down to New Orleans. Tell her you're going to buy her a deck.
No? John Rose got me talking about my mom. How did he do that?
I don't know, bro.
That was personal stuff. I shouldn't have said any of that.
He likes to take things over. He don't like when he's not included in things.
You took a phone call. Were you calling your mom?
I just missed some calls. My mom, by the way, is a... So what else you got?
All right, look. That's all we... Let's take a break.
Okay.
We'll come back with DC Paul.
You can see it because I can never, when I tell people about it, I can't really deliver it like you do.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's such a good joke. But I'm sorry because I've noticed sometimes I told you to do it and it may not have been the audience or the venue for that joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so at Tarpon Joe's, the football game just happens. I start, you know, because I wrote down some notes to myself. I'm just writing down notes to myself. What are all my football jokes? Because a fucking football game was just on a big screen. So, and I was talking about, like, you know, how all of Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, the championships happen in the Superdome. So I'm just thinking all those state championship rings are seeing so much pussy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the kind of right stuff for
that crowd.
When they all got their state championship rings from high school on. It's Kenner. You know what I'm saying? So... You're doing that shit.
It was working.
It's working out. Then you were like, hey, do your child sex doll joke. I don't know if this is going to work right now, bud. But I'll do it because we're friends. If you'd really tell me to do that.
Thank you and I'm sorry. Both of those things at the same time, man. Thank you.
But sometimes I feel like I worked on this joke a lot. It's good. I don't want to do it. Okay. I want to put it in my bag and then I want to shoot a special later. But it's like, I know that 3 minutes is good. So let's just wait for a special. Actually, I want to kind of talk about this because
if you would have told me that, I'd have been like, you know what, you're right. That one is good. Like, it's good enough. You know, if you would have said that, but like, you were so like so easily like convinced. You know what I mean? You were like, sure, I'll do it. You know, but like, I didn't even think about the fact. I didn't think about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
man.
But I like it and I like practicing. I like to see if it'll work like this. Will it work like this? Probably not. The problem with certain jokes is they require 6 minutes of setup. Because there's so many, like, your headspace has to be revealed. Like, remember, I was involved in this situation. That's why I think about this. That's why I think about this. You develop your personality.
You're right.
And before that's established, you can't go into the dark,
you're
dark
right,
waters.
You're right.
I remember Tom Rhodes was at Burbank one time. And one of the worst sets I ever did was Tom Rhodes was on my podcast. I was this like young kid. I couldn't believe Tom Rhodes would be on my podcast. He's such a sweet guy. He's the greatest person ever. So he's in fucking Burbank and he goes, I'll be on your podcast if you drive me from the safari in to the fucking venue. And I was like, cool, it's just down the block, you know. So we're smoking weed, we do a podcast.
With me, very special guest, Tom Rhodes.
What's up, Eric?
Thank you so much for doing
this. Hello, listening world.
You are a big sweetie. I just want to get that out of the way.
My pleasure. I'm pro comedy.
So let's start at the beginning. All right. You were, like, when Comedy Central was first emerging, you were kind of the original VJ of Comedy Central.
I was their boy, yeah.
Yeah.
Their little spokesperson, whatever the right title is.
You had some really cool shots where you were in a jail doing interstitials. Mark Maron was furious.
Yeah, they shot my jokes like they were a rock video. They did the first series of six, like in, it's called the Catacombs in New York City. It's this real tough jail. And even just filming there, I was happy to leave. But
did you think that there were some ghosts in there?
No, it's just creepy to be in like jail cells, think, you know, it's cute to shoot something, but. You think about, oh, fuck, people are putting months and years into this.
Was it active at that point?
In different sections. We had this one section that was open, and that's why we could film there. And it was shot beautifully. And
did anyone walk by and say, like, I could smell your cunt and throw jizz at you as you walked
no,
by?
No. We didn't. We weren't near anybody.
Oh, okay.
We got in and out. It was smooth. And then the next, those were popular, and then I got to do another series of six, and they shot them, like, on the Hudson and some docks and shit. And
that's so cool.
The meatpacking plant before it grew up when it was still kind of dingy looking.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that kind of, you know, that's where they said, you know, let's have this skinny long haired dude be our fucking guy.
Yeah. So. I watched his first show. It was unbelievable. The second show, I'm like, hey, man, can I get 5 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, sure. We've been hanging out all day. We've been having a good time. I do 5 minutes, and I couldn't eat more shit. It was the worst ever. The worst ever. And I had a real depression after that. Mm-hmm. I drove him home. But the one thing he said to me is like, you didn't get him to like you first.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You got to get him to like you. But also, that's, you got to get him to understand, get on the page, your same page of your story world that you're creating.
That's exactly what I told you earlier. When like you, when you say you've been growing, it's more so you've been funny, but you're growing more so with your relatability, with like getting him to like you before going right into, like, yeah, that's exactly what you said, and I agree. Like, you, especially with where you go with your comedy, you got to get them, I guess get them to like you is a good way to put it, but definitely get them, like, in your world. And I can understand how some of those jokes, you know, take more time to set up before going into it. You know what I mean?
Also, I also am okay with not always agreeing with my onstage persona. You know, I don't agree with most of the things I'm saying. I'm just trying to say the funniest things.
Oh, I said that earlier now. Yeah. I said you don't always have to be, like, up on stage, like, giving, like, your real personal opinion. Sometimes you can just be saying the funniest stuff. Yeah, I agree with that. I know that's not everybody's thing. Everybody wants to, like, I guess when you're branding yourself as an artist, as a comedian, you know, it's good to include parts of yourself, how you really feel, how you really think. It's really good. So people can get to know you and can just like you and even follow you if you do other things, like if you were to host a show or, you know, be on it. If, you know.
Yeah, your star's rising. All of a sudden, you have this experience. You've done these shows. People like you here, you know, whatever.
It's like, yeah, it's just like what I'm politics, just saying. Like, name recognition. If your jokes are personal, and that's more than making people laugh. It's making people, like, get to know and like you and follow you for the way you think and the person that you are, you know. But then sometimes, you know, just saying, you know, the funny stuff, getting people to laugh, it's a part of the art form, too. You know, you don't always have to, like, be trying to prove something.
So there's also this idea that, like, in our given culture, we all read the same articles. There's jokes, there's ideas that are kind of out there in the ether.
Man.
But also the fact that we say the same jokes over and over and over again, after a certain point, they might seem obvious to certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like low-key plagiarism that happens sometimes. Sometimes you're like, wait a minute, you kind of in an improv moment did this joke, but actually that joke is this person's joke.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you seen, you know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
I've seen it. I've seen it, man. In my own face, I've seen, like, a comedian do jokes and do another comedian's jokes in a room full of people who know that comedian. But from what I learned about that situation was that guy was doing throwaway jokes. So both of those comedians were doing throwaway jokes, like, I guess, internet jokes or whatever, you know, jokes that they both didn't write.
But I don't know what throwaway jokes mean.
A throwaway joke is like, what's a joke everybody knows already? Like a joke everybody already knows.
Like the chicken across the road.
Yeah,
get to the other
exactly,
side.
Exactly. That's a throwaway joke. That's like, I didn't write it. Hey, you know.
I'm just keeping the party going.
Pretty
what
much.
I'm saying is, like, the whole art of stand-up is like, and don't we know by now? Haven't we learned? There's, like, simple rules. Write your own stuff. You know, write your jokes. Write your jokes. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have to do the same jokes for 18 years to get comfortable with them, to start writing other ones, what you got to do is write your own jokes.
Absolutely.
You know? And make sure that you're the one who did it, you know. But keep writing, too.
Yeah, I don't know how, you know, if you don't write your own jokes, how can you expect to get booked telling jokes that, like, anybody could tell? Telling jokes that you didn't write. I could go on stage and tell these same jokes.
Yeah.
Why would somebody book you? Like, do you, is your delivery just that good on these jokes that people go, you know, I don't know.
It's like someone goes there with a book called Throwaway Jokes and they just start reading. It's like, so this book can just be disseminated and then stand-up comedy's over.
And then there's
so
the
if you would do
of,
that for 5 seconds, why would you, you know, don't do it at all.
There's the idea of parallel thought, which says that, like, you know, two of us could have thought of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, which I get. I get, like, I've seen, like, people, not, I don't think in person, but, like, definitely on the internet, I've seen, like, people who've written articles that included, like, jokes or lines or things that were similar to something I wrote, you know, and, like, one in particular, there was this video of Mary J. Blige that came out a few months ago, and she was just dancing, and I don't know if you know Mary J. Blige, and when she's dancing on stage, but, like, it is so goofy, and, I, like, tweeted and Facebooked, you know, some say dance like nobody's watching, but I say dance like Mary J. Blige. That's when you're sure people are watching, but you really don't give a shit, you know. And then I read this article that kind of ended with a line that was very, very, very close to that. And that, like, at that point, I had to accept the fact that, like, the joke that, like, I wrote, I felt like somebody else could have already wrote that, you know, knowing, like, what everybody already, hey, that's my daddy, what everybody already know about Mary J. Blige, like, that joke could have been done already. Pause for 1 second, because my dad, no, I mean, if you want to keep it going,
yeah,
you want to pause.
Yeah, we can keep it going for a little bit. Yo, come on over here.
Nothing, man, I'm recording the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we put it on pause, though.
You can come over here for a sec. You know, it's interesting, we've been talking about our dads this podcast.
Yeah, good.
Remember, you met my dad too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So that's what we've been talking about a little bit. DC Paul's dad just walked in.
Yeah, man.
Hey, actually, can you sit like over here? Just because of the direction of the mic. Yeah.
What's going on, Daddy? I think we probably mentioned you a couple times early in the podcast.
Yeah. So have you been watching DC Paul grow as a comic? Has that been a scary process? Are you ever worried that he's going to put you on blast?
Well, first of all, nothing he would do would surprise me. He's been a performer since he was 3.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's been a performer.
What was his first performance? A school play? Or?
Well, officially, actually, one of his first performances wasn't too far from here. It was at a boys' club that's no longer here. It's in the Bywater. He did a performance there. But he performed around the house and stuff like that since he was like 3 years old. He mimicked stuff he saw on TV. He's been doing that almost all his life, so nothing he would do would surprise me.
What was like a moment where you watched him do a play or something and you're like, damn, like, you know what I mean, this is gonna happen now, this is all he's gonna turn to, just do this full time?
I'm gonna tell a story.
Alright.
He came to me and his mother when he was about 11 years old. And he asked, could he drop out of 6th grade?
What?
To pursue a career in performing, in acting at the time. And, of course, we told him no. And he cried for about 4 days.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, he cried. We didn't understand it.
He would just stare at the moon in the rain.
I wanted to go to New York.
Like, what the hell's going on?
He was like 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah. Man, I wanted to be a child star, and I'm still struggling to get on at 30.
Now, my brother-in-law, who's married to my sister, he was a theater major in college, and he's done some things in theater. And at that time, when that incident happened, I was talking to him, and he said, you know, some people like to perform, but some people have to perform. And that's how he helped me to understand Darren. He has to perform.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My dad just called me Darren.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. That's my name.
Wow. I'm sorry.
How many brothers do you have?
I'm the middle of 3 boys.
Oh, okay. That gets confusing.
No, it's all good. No. I mean, people know my name.
Okay.
It ain't no thing.
But you've been coming here. You've been watching him do stand-up, too.
Yeah.
Is that getting better? What's going on?
He's getting better. He's getting better.
He hasn't embarrassed you yet?
No, he doesn't embarrass me. Actually, I've in the beginning, I gave him some tips.
Some stories from
audience from
the
perspective
past?
In terms of timing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was way in the beginning. He has hit his stride now in terms of his stand-up. I will say this, just watching him for over 25 years, he's good at stand-up. He's incredible at open mic poetry and music and acting. I think in terms of his skill set, I think as a musician, he's tops. I think his stand-up is second. I think his poetry is his poetry, original poetry, is like 2/8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could be a mogul and like conquer different disciplines, you know?
He absolutely could. But his love now, apparently his passion now was stand-up comedy and emceeing and what goes along with that.
And so acting.
And I support that. But I remember, this was shortly after Katrina, he asked me to come see him do his poetry several times, and I didn't go. And then one time I went, we were on Decatur Street, and the audience wouldn't let him off. That was my first time hearing him do poetry. Mm-hmm. The audience wouldn't let him off the stage. And a guy from, at the time, they had HBO had this thing, Deaf Poetry.
Yeah,
the guy was definitely was asking about it. I think at some point, obviously, his stand-up comedy will surpass his acting and music. But
I think they all help each other, you know. Like, you know, I do screenwriting and stuff. I think screenwriting helps stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I think they both
stand-up
helps
screenwriting. I think the stage presence from doing poetry, from acting, and all like from comedy, all kind of works together. And you know, Daddy, I know I want to do it all.
Yeah.
So just, you know, focusing on...
But also, it's like you got to be tops at one for the others to start those opportunities.
Yeah, you got
to
But, you know, I look at people like Jamie Foxx, right? If Jamie Foxx would have wrote and sold a song to somebody else, and Jamie Foxx was, like, known as, like, a great songwriter, mm-hmm. like, you would have never known that he's a hilarious comedian or an award-winning actor, you know what I mean? So him would... So you kind of have to cast a wide net...
I get it.
...and kind of go after... as many opportunities as possible, because like I think what was the big hit for Jamie Foxx? Was it In Living Color, or was it, you know, because he was doing music before that?
But actually Jamie Foxx started off doing stand up. That's when he came into the public consciousness doing stand up back in the day.
He had a studio album like that was for sale before I knew of him as a stand up comedian.
Jamie Foxx came up in that whole. Deaf Comedy Jam with Steve Harvey and
Martin
and all those guys got
Bernie,
when all those guys blew up. Mm-hmm. He came in with that. Bill
I
Bellamy
think that like stand up, you know, it's all honestly a good way to get your foot in the door. But like stand up, you know, a lot of stand up comedians. I've never sang on stage, but I want to like start doing some of that. You know, like stand up, you can be a stand up comedian and show that you can also act, you can also sing. You know, you can freestyle whatever. So. Yeah,
but
I want to start doing some of that.
I think your comfort on stage and your stage presence is a plus. I think that you didn't have that to.
Yeah, no.
You didn't have that, you know, because I've known some musicians, really good musicians, locally, who had to overcome
stage fright.
Stage fright.
Yeah,
and they were great musicians. So I agree with you. I think being able to talk to the audience doing stand up because mm-hmm. you just that's stand up comedy is immediate reaction kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have to have an incredible amount of self-confidence to do it, and you have to be prepared to do it. It's an immediate reaction.
Yeah.
You can get laughs, either the audience or seizure, and don't.
And the other thing about a stand-up special, if you are a comic, you coalesce an album in a stand-up special eventually, or an album or something, that's fucking hard, man. And you can't fake laughs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can't pump in fucking laughs from a fake audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like canned laughter, that's not going to work.
No.
People are going to know. So it's got to be real. And if you can make people laugh for an hour,
man, I'm scared of doing an hour. I don't know. I'd mentioned earlier that I put on a half sweater because it's supposed to be autumn in New Orleans. I thought, it's hot. It's too hot for what I got on right now. Luckily, you can't see me.
I think as long as you keep grinding.
What's up,
man? How you doing, man? Appreciate it, babe. How you been?
All right.
I think as long as you keep grinding.
Nice.
I think you'll be successful. You gotta stay at it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Man, so this Thursday, I just got a call. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna put it on it. I just got a call earlier today. So, you know, I've been on this show on Oxygen called It Takes a Killer.
Uh-huh.
It's a show that recreates true crimes, and I'm one of the actors in the recreation. So you never really see my face, but you see my body. They use lighting tricks and blurring to, you know, blur out my face, and I don't talk, so you just see my body.
Yeah.
But whatever, I've done 3 episodes so far, and I got a call today to do another episode on Thursday and Friday. So that's like a point towards a SAG credit, you know, even though it's, you know, it's,
yeah.
I mean, what if that's the way I get in the door? You know, like, yeah. Hey, I'm a SAG actor from these recreations I was doing, you know, and here's everything else I can do. Yeah, but that's this Thursday and Friday.
But also it's important, like, if people look at your IMDb, they're like, oh, he was in the game. He did this, he did mm-hmm. this, he's playing the fucking game. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we're
oh,
doing.
Oh, I need to give me IMDb. Well, I mean, I need to get some more credits for IMDb, but yeah. Like, I think having a body of work is, like, most important. Like, people see you from, like, oh, he was in that commercial. Oh, he wrote for that show. He hosted this show. You know, just kind of, like, keeping the momentum and the work going. Synergy, everything work together.
Yeah.
I actually came here. I read about this place, and I read about the ribeye Philly cheesesteak. The ribeye cheesesteak.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'm going to check out the ribeye cheesesteak. So I came here. I checked it out, talked to the owner. We got to talk. He was talking about live. He was in Chicago at the time. He was in Chicago for a little bit at the time.
I was.
Yeah. Darren, DC was. And so I told him about my son. I said, you know, at the time he was doing a lot of sketch comedy. And they got together and he's been here. He's been
the show has
evolved. He's been here ever since, and he's actually kind of used this to help promote him to secure, you know, other opportunities. Which I think is smart. I think he's a you know.
It's all just like leverage. Oh, you got this position, you can leverage for that. Oh, but mm-hmm. I'm qualified to do this, so I'm doing that. Qualified to doing this, doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is the easiest place for me to come and see him.
Yeah, he was already. My dad was already like technically kind of a regular at this place.
Yeah.
I used to come here and watch. I remember come here and watch the Saints game sometimes. Come here and get a cheesesteak.
Yeah, they got good food. Barbara does. Yeah.
They don't even have the ribeye no more.
Damn.
Ribeye cheesesteak.
I mean, I'll tell you, the Cuban sandwich is really good though.
Yeah.
All right, let's just blow up Bar Redux.
801 Pullen Avenue, Bar Redux. Mr. Kelvin be in the kitchen. They got. Sometimes they got ribeye, but they got all kind of quesadillas and burgers and cheesesteaks and nachos. Yeah, and my so daddy got every, some wings right now.
Every Tuesday, you know, there's a Young Funny show.
Yeah.
You know, got there 8:30, show 9 o'clock, you know.
Yeah, let's say that. 8:30, show 9 o'clock.
You know, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes you wait for an audience, but that's every show.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's it.
Yeah, man. Say Eric, man. Else? Now, thank you for having me on the podcast, bro.
It's the return episode.
The return episode.
I got my shit out of jail.
Where you gonna put this? Is this going on?
Probably, maybe in 2 weeks. I want to bank a few and then.
Like, what's the podcast network?
Highway Diary.
Highway Diary. Like,
yeah, this is Highway Diary.
I mean, like, how can I listen?
Don't worry about it. That'll be very easily available when I post this shit.
Okay.
All right. Later.
Later.
Thanks.